Hello, this is Claire Thayer from MCOL, and I'm welcoming Jan Sidorov to our Web Summit event today and to our podcast recording. Jan's here to speak with us a little bit about his presentation, which is titled The Benefit of ICD-10 Increased Claim Specificity, Targeting Population-Based Programs. Jan, it's great to have you here with us today.
And it's a pleasure to be speaking. Hello, everybody. My opening slide has my name, and most of all, I want to call attention to my email. I certainly don't mind when persons email directly with additional questions that may come up during the course of my presentation. So if you want to, please feel free to get a hold of me. Please also keep in mind that a lot of the stuff that I'll be talking about, I also talk about in my blog, and the address is there. If you go to the first slide, I just wanted to give an outline of what it is that I'll be talking about in the next 15 minutes or so. The first is a question about whether or not this is really end of days. And then I intend to move on to the real meat of my presentation, talking about the advantages of ICD-10. I'd like to talk about two positive implications for disease management that I think are important. I also think that there's one important implication for the patient-centered medical home. And then I'll conclude with some discussion about one-on-one care versus populations and ICD-9 and ICD-10 and why this may have been inevitable all along. So let's go to the next slide. As everybody knows, there's a date out there, October 1, 2013, I think was the last time I read about this. This is the date when the federal government has announced that data sets must be following the ICD-10 format. I have read and I've seen many colleagues indicate that this could be the healthcare equivalent of Y2K, if you'll remember what the fears that were going on about January 1, 2000, but more importantly, another perspective that this will literally be the end of days, that it could bring the healthcare system down to its knees. My presentation assumes that this is not going to happen, that it's not going to be that bad. I have a lot of trust and I have a lot of faith in the ability of the healthcare system to remain very, very resilient in all of this, but of course, we'll see. If you go to the next slide, assuming the world doesn't end, what are the advantages that could happen as a result of implementing ICD-10 in our data sets? Well, most importantly, it is offering a greater level of detail in the transactions between payer and provider. And I think of them in three broad categories, and this has also been written about. There's a good article on this from Managed Care Magazine, and the link is down below. But the first is that ICD-10 offers a much richer ability to convert narrative information that was otherwise not available because it was narrative into hard, discrete data packets that can be much more easily manipulated. Secondly, the data that you do get from ICD-9 transactions, base transactions, has a much higher definition. You understand much better what the diagnoses are, and you understand much better the services that went into the treatment of those diagnoses. And last but not least, you have a greater ability to extract those data into analyses that give you a much better feel for what's going on, and the term for that is granularity. If you go to the next slide, just as one small example in one small corner of the healthcare universe, the diagnostic condition of diabetic retinopathy. Under ICD-10, there will be 12 codes that describe diabetic retinopathy, and I've written them there. It's for those of us who are in ICD-9 land, these will look very, very strange. But basically, all the different code sets describe different categories or different combinations of mild, moderate, and severe diabetic retinopathy with or without macular edema, both proliferative and non-proliferative. And contrast that, if you will, with ICD-9. And I tried personally to look up, you know, what are the codes for diabetic retinopathy. I know there are HEDIS codes out there, but very, very briefly, if you look at it, there seem to be basically four codes out there. There are the basic codes for controlled or uncontrolled diabetes with retinopathy, plus there's the 362.01, which describes diabetic retinopathy, and then there's the usual unspecified code. So these are four codes which really don't tell you about the severity or the comorbidities associated with diabetic retinopathy. ICD-10 will give you that. And this is a similar story that goes on for all the other conditions that we worry about, that those of us in the population-based care industry, when we're dealing with chronic illness, because of these codes, we'll have a much better idea of what's going on in the populations that we serve. So this is an example of the narrative information. If there's greater narration about what's going on. If you go to the next slide, you know, why is this important? Well, you know, I think there are three key things that are going on. The first is triage, the second is predictive modeling, and the third is research. When it comes to triage, of course, you know, as clinicians, especially in the population care business, all of us want to go after, if you will, apply the highest level of maximum services to those with the greatest need. So by understanding who's got bilateral severe diabetic retinopathy with macular edema or with proliferation, for example, when we see those code data sets come across the computer screens, if you will, we'll be much better able to assign our care management priorities to that particular population. The second is that in the world of predictive modeling, it's generally understood that the more data you have, the better off you are in terms of being able to predict what's going on. And I'll give you an example of that in a little bit. But by being able to input a higher number of more discrete variables, the folks that do predictive modeling will be much better able to assess overall risk. And then last but not least, there's also the whole issue of research. And I'm giving you an example. The graph on the right side of the slide examines the progression of diabetic retinopathy in the Diabetes Control and Complications Trial. The actual data itself isn't important, but because of the need of clinicians and other providers to submit data to the managed care and the health insurance organizations, we'll be able to use those data sets to perform precisely these kinds of studies without necessarily having to go through the rigmarole of setting up disease-specific or research-specific registries. I think this data will better enable us to understand what's going on in the populations that we serve and to also be able to perform research. If you go to the next slide, I also pointed out that the ICD-10 system gives us a much better definition of diagnoses and services, and that's important no matter what kind of payment system you're under. In the world of fee-for-service, we, the payers, or we, the providers, will be better able to match up the level of payment to the work effort. The higher the severity of the disease involving the patient, for example, you could argue that a much higher payment is warranted. So I don't know what's going to happen to fee-for-service, but whatever remains of fee-for-service in the future will obviously be better targeted. Secondly, in risk adjustment, there are capitated and bundled payment systems that are coming across the horizon. Of course, they were there back in the 1990s, but it looks like they're coming again. And as everybody on this phone call probably appreciates, being able to appropriately recognize the severity of the illness in a bundle or capitated payment system is also very, very important to make sure that it works. You could argue in the past that the old-style capitated systems were much too blunt to appropriately reward clinicians for the work that they were doing. ICD-10 may be able to overcome that shortcoming. There's also the whole issue of pay for performance. Obviously, if we are paying clinicians fee-for-service and we're also paying them risk adjustment, being able to reward physicians by tracking the severity of illness and how well they're managing patients and how well the severity of illness is progressing over time has huge implications for pay-for-performance. I do have a prediction, however, of a downside. Everyone who's been in managed care understands the travails of quote-unquote unbundling, trying to unbundle services and pay for each discrete unit of service. I predict that ICD-10 will result in up-justifying of services. So this may or may not be a new term. It's something that I thought of, and if it comes up again, you can say you heard it first during this particular webcast. In the next slide, I'm also talking about analytics. There's a concept out there of cheap randomized clinical trials. In other words, as interventions are rolled out across a managed care population, across a network, across a group of patients that are under disease management, for example, it'll be much better. We will be much better able, I think, because of ICD-10, to better study the impact of the rollouts across populations, especially if they occur over time, and especially if all patients aren't exposed to it at the same time, that will, for all intents and purposes, really mimic a randomized controlled clinical trial. And I think ICD-10 will allow us to be able to do that without the work and hassle and expense of developing formal randomized controlled clinical trials. In addition, there are other methodologies out there where when you're assessing the impact of interventions for populations, you need to know how well that intervention works across your intervention population versus controls. And thanks to ICD-10, you'll be much better able to develop control populations. In the disease management world, many of us are familiar with risk corridors. In other words, downside risk and upside risk limits. ICD-10 will enable us to better manage that. And I think it remains to be seen, and that's why I put a question mark there, whether or not the actuaries will use this. I've spoken to some of my actuary friends, and they're sort of looking forward to ICD-10, but they're not absolutely sure that ICD-10 will necessarily enable them to do better pricing for insurance populations in the future. Time will tell, but that's certainly a possibility out there, and that's certainly something to keep an eye on. If you go to the next slide, this is what I wanted to talk about, the implications for disease management. There's a concept out there called the R-squared. The R-squared is a measure of the amount of explanation that you have for the degree of change regarding an intervention that you make. And this is one slide of one study that I came across in the distant past that looked at the ability of the agent sex to predict an outcome. When you roll in pharmacy, your predictability goes up, and if you integrate age, sex, and other claims along with pharmacy in this, your R-squared also goes up. But I want to call your attention to the 14 to 16. That's a percent. So at best, in this particular study, only 14 to 16% of the variation in this particular outcome, and I believe this was cost, was explained by age, sex, pharmacy, and claims. And I believe that even in the best of systems, I've read that about 30 to 35% is about the highest that we can get under our current systems with R-squared. So in this particular study, only about 15% of the variation is explained. The maximum that's ever been achieved is around 30 to 35%. I know there are other predictive modeling companies that will claim even more. The interesting thing, however, is that ICD-10 definitely has the potential to increase our ability to attain a greater R-squared in these kinds of studies. In other words, we'll be better able to assess what are the variants out there, what are the drivers that cause different outcomes, including the cost of care. If you go to the next slide, implication number two for disease management. I think many of us in the disease management industry are aware of a phenomenon called the quote-unquote sweet middle. There are patients out there for whom their chronic illness is really not that bad. And that's the point of the slide over on the left-hand side, that for persons with relatively mild heart failure, if you intervene with disease management, it turns out that there really isn't much of a difference between the treatment group and the usual care group. Now, these are patients with very, very mild heart failure who, you know, are ambulatory, outpatient, and doing very well. It's just that they have a study, for example, an echocardiogram that indicates their ejection fraction is low, but they're very, very well compensated. For those patients, disease management doesn't appear to work very well. Ditto over on the other side. These are patients that were hospitalized with severe heart failure. And it turns out that disease management, again, was unable to achieve a statistically significant change. The point is that there are patients out there with not that severe and not that mild heart failure who are sort of in the middle, who are not as well compensated, who are threatened by the greater likelihood of hospitalization. They're not destined to be hospitalized, and they're not destined to never be hospitalized. They're in the middle. I believe that through ICD-10 coding, we'll be much better able to identify those patients in the sweet middle and appropriately direct our population-based care programs to those patients. So that's implication number two. There's also implications for the patient-centered medical home. Now, the medical home demonstration is currently on hold, as folks may have heard, but if this is any indication of where Medicare was intending to go in terms of reimbursing physicians for medical home services, Medicare was intending to use the hierarchical condition code scores to reflect the severity of illness and the burden to the physician of caring for it. And there were basically two categories. HCC scores less than 1.6 represented one payment level, and HCC scores of greater than 1.6 represented another level. And a 2x2 grid was developed. Tier 1 are medical homes with less robust medical home services, and Tier 2 is clinics with more robust medical home services. And as you can see, the payments varied according to whether or not you were Tier 1 and Tier 2, and whether each patient had an HCC score of less than 1.6 or greater than 1.6. For patients with an HCC score of greater than 1.6, you can see the payment was correspondingly higher. If you were medical home Tier 1, you got $80, and if you were medical home Tier 2, you got $100. But that's much higher than patients with a lower HCC score. I hope and I think that as ICD-10 gets rolled in 2013, that Medicare's ability to appropriately toggle the level of payment to patient-centered medical homes will also benefit from greater specificity from that particular claim system. If you go to the next slide, we're on the home stretch here. You know, in usual care, I've talked about this before in other presentations, we have the physician in the middle, and the system, healthcare system out there, is traditionally arrayed to support the physician. So the triage system, support staff, records, nurses, all the money went to the support of the physician, and the patient would come in one end and come out the other end in better shape. But the idea is that if you took good care of the physician, the patient would be better served for it. And I think under that kind of scenario, ICD-9 is good enough, because what's going on in the physician-patient relationship doesn't really lend itself to a severe need for high granularity, high understanding of what exactly is going on. Here comes population-based care management in the next slide. Things have changed. We're now talking about populations. We're not talking about one-on-one care involving physicians. If you think about the patient-centered medical home, for example, if you think about disease management, that's all arrayed around the care of assigned patients to a clinic or assigned patients within a network who have a chronic illness. And in this particular system, all the resources are arrayed around the care of the population. And because you are caring for a population, if you hit the button, you'll see that ICD-10 was inevitable. It was something that had to happen because we needed to better understand the needs of that population so that we could appropriately arrange the care management, case management, demand management services, and to also enable the physicians to better care for what's going on. So in conclusion, ICD-10, assuming that the vice presidents and chief information officers and folks over in the finance departments in which we work survive its arrival, for those of us in the population-based disease management, patient-centered medical home, part of the delivery system means far greater detail on the patients that are being cared for. It will aid triage. It will enhance risk adjustment, and predictive modeling will be far more accurate, I believe, than previously seen. It has huge implications for fee-for-service. capitation and pay for performance, as I mentioned before. Who knows where that's going? But one of the places it's going to go is big changes thanks to the advent of ICD-10, better enabling us to recognize the work caring for patients and delivering quality. It's going to help the system develop cheap randomized control clinical trials, easier procurement of control populations, and setting risk, I believe. It also will increase the R squared when we're looking at the variation associated with the interventions that we deliver to populations. I think it'll help us to identify the sweet middle, and I think it'll also increase and help the accuracy of medical home payments. And if you think about it, it was inevitable. It's going to happen sooner or later. From my own point of view, thank goodness the feds have decided to do this. And that ends my presentation. And as I mentioned before, please don't hesitate to email me if you have any questions. This is stuff that I'm always happy to talk about. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And for our audience, you've been listening to Dr. Jan Sidorov. His complete presentation is available for download on the Healthcare Web Summit event site. And in addition, on slide 1, you'll find his complete contact information. This now concludes our podcast.